Last week, High Court Judge Mr. Justice Mann ruled in a high-profile dispute over the Tate Modern's relatively new viewing gallery, offering panoramic views of London, bought by residents of the neighbouring Neo Bankside development, who complained that it offered a particularly prime view of their luxury, extensively glazed flats. With all the publicity surrounding the case, you likely know that, despite their claims that thousands of visitors a year stared into their homes, taking photographs, using binoculars, and even in some cases making obscene gestures, the residents were unsuccessful in their bid to close part of the viewing gallery. But what was the judge's reasoning, and what could some of the implications of that ruling be? Joining me to discuss those matters in detail is Megan Davies, an associate at Charles Russell Speechley's LLP, who has been closely following the case. Welcome, Megan.
Thanks, Jess.
So let's start with how the residents put their claims in this case. There were two main grounds, isn't that right?
Yes, so the residents' claim was that the use of the viewing platform by the public, which overlooks their flats, constituted a breach of Section 8 of the Human Rights Act 1998, which requires public authorities to comply with the European Convention on Human Rights, including Article 8, which is a right to protection of private and family life. So that was ground one. Mm-hmm. And ground two was pursuant to common law private nuisance for interference with the residents' use and enjoyment of their flats.
And what was the remedy they were seeking?
Primarily, they were seeking an injunction requiring the Tate Modern to effectively close part of the viewing platform, which gives views into the claimant's flats, either through cordoning off large sections of the southern and western parts, or erecting screening, or anything else that could be done to prevent the overlooking. Mm-hmm.
So dealing first with that ground one, that human rights claim, that the judge dealt with that one fairly quickly. Why was that dismissed?
Well, in order for the Tate to be liable for a breach under the Human Rights Act, it needs to first apply to the Tate, and it can only apply if the Tate is a public authority or if it's deemed to be a body carrying out public functions. And the Tate is not a public authority, so whether or not the Human Rights Act applied turned on whether it could be said to be carrying out public functions. So the judge looked at this and considered that while some of the function the Tate carries out could be considered public, and while some of its funding is public, it couldn't be considered that such functions were what the judge called governmental, as the Tate's not fulfilling a delegated function of the state. So that meant that the Tate was held not to be carrying out public functions for the purposes of the Act, and therefore it didn't apply, and the Tate couldn't be liable for a breach of the convention rights.
So that's probably not very surprising, but perhaps the more interesting battleground was the nuisance claim. And the judge there made a potentially significant decision, at least in principle, didn't he? What did he decide about privacy and nuisance?
A common law private nuisance is usually caused by a person doing something on his or her own land that they are legally entitled to do, but which, for example, affects or interferes with the use and enjoyment of their neighbour's land. The usual examples you'd come across would be noise pollution or something else that physically escapes from the defendant's land onto the claimant's land. Up until this decision, it was well established that there was no common law right not to be overlooked and that privacy was not protected by the law of nuisance. Here, what makes this case very interesting is that the judge decided that in appropriate cases, the law of nuisance is capable of protecting privacy rights from overlooking. And the judge stressed here that he didn't consider himself to have created a new cause of action, while some of us think he did, but instead that he was developing the common law under the direction of statute, which he considered the court was obliged to do ever since the introduction of, in this case, Article 8 of the Convention. So he thought he was effectively bridging the gap to existing laws protecting privacy in the home, for example, the Protection from Harassment Act 1997. This decision doesn't mean that all overlooking will constitute a nuisance. It will depend on whether and to what extent there's a legitimate expectation of privacy, bearing in mind the location, the use by the defendant, and the nature and use of the claimant's property. The example the judge gives of an act that could constitute a privacy nuisance was that of a landowner constructing a viewing tower on his land with the sole purpose of viewing his neighbour's land and then taking payment from the public to view that land. Not sure how realistic or helpful this is, but then again, some of the worst disputes are neighbour disputes, so who knows?
Well, if that's the textbook example of an appropriate case, then it's perhaps not surprising that the judge found that this case was not an appropriate case, but he rejected the resident's claim. So what was his reasoning for that?
Okay, let me lead in with a few general comments first, which might explain why the judge came to the conclusion he came to. Mm. So in nuisance claims generally, the law recognises that nowadays in modern society there needs to be a degree of give and take between neighbours, i.e. that a degree of interference with the use and enjoyment of your land must be tolerated and will not be an actual nuisance. So disputes tend to arise over what is tolerable and what goes beyond tolerability and becomes an actual nuisance. This is, I suppose, what keeps nuisance law interesting, because generally everything will turn on the facts. Mm. So the give and take principle is effectively a balancing exercise where the court considers all the relevant circumstances of the case, including the character of the neighbourhood, the intensity, frequency, and duration of the interference, and what, objectively, a normal person would find reasonable to put up with in the circumstances. And that's exactly what the judge did here. He carried out a balancing exercise, and he gave a number of interesting reasons for concluding that there was no actionable nuisance here, including that, on considering the character of the neighbourhood, which he classed as an inner city, urban London, he found that the viewing platform was not an unreasonable use in the locality. The residents would expect overlooking and living close to their neighbours. He used quite an interesting turn of phrase here. He said that anyone who lives in an inner city can expect to live quite cheek by jowl with neighbours. The viewing platform had not been erected for the purpose of allowing the public to view the flats. This is what happened to some degree, but it is not the purpose for which the platform was erected. If it had, then the use may have been unreasonable. The invasion into the residents' privacy was, at least in part, self-induced by them choosing to reside in flats with floor-to-ceiling glass walls, and also moving their living accommodation into the winter gardens, which increased their exposure to being overlooked. Another important factor was that the Tate had taken steps to limit the exposure, including by reducing the opening hours to the viewing platform, particularly the southern and western parts, which the residents complained about, putting up notices asking the public to respect their neighbours' privacy, and employing security guards to prevent photography of the flats. While the last two were accepted not to be of great effect, the fact that steps had been taken by the Tate to limit the exposure played a big role here, as the judge emphasised this a few times. Another factor was that there were remedial measures which were both available and reasonable for the residents to take to limit their exposure and the invasion of their privacy. For example, by installing net curtains or privacy film, lowering their solar blinds, or getting big plants. As I said, a not insignificant consideration was given to the Tate's behaviour and also the residents' ability to mitigate the exposure by taking remedial measures. One area that was discussed, and some people might have thought would have some bearing on the decision, but didn't, was the knowledge or lack thereof of the Tate planning a viewing platform of some sort before the neobanksite development was started, and the discussions between the Tate and the developer throughout the planning process. And the fact that this wasn't considered as part of the balancing exercise goes back to the well-established principle that it's no defence to a nuisance claim that the claimant came to the nuisance. It's either an actionable nuisance or it is not.
Mm. So do you think many people reading some of the evidence in the case and the complaints registered by these residents would find it surprising that the judge decided the case in the way he did?
I think yes and no. Yes, because having decided that overlooking can constitute a nuisance, then given the amount of visitors to the viewing platform per year, which is about 600,000, and the fact that the visitors can look into your flat, watch you live, take photos of you and your flat, which is clearly an invasion into privacy, which no one would like to witness in their homes, and which you would expect, where there is a law protecting your privacy, to be protected from. However, These are apartments in the City of London, which are largely made of glass. So on balance, you must ask yourself, how reasonable and how realistic is it to expect privacy when choosing to live in a city centre flat made of glass? If you didn't want to be overlooked, then presumably you would either not move into a flat made of glass, or you would take some steps to limit your exposure. So on balance, I think the decision is not surprising. It comes back to the established principles that you don't generally have a right to an unobstructed view or a right not to be overlooked. This judgment merely opens the possibility of there being a claim for overlooking in appropriate circumstances. Although, looking at this case, it makes it difficult to imagine a realistic scenario where being overlooked would be an actionable interference, except where you have the extreme case the judge used as an example, basically the neighbour from hell.
And you mentioned the judge added at the end some helpful suggestions for the near Bankside residents on how they could better protect their own privacy, solar blinds and net curtains. How well do you think those suggestions would likely to be received?
Well, by the Neo Bankside residents, not very well, of course. especially, I suppose, the suggestions that they could just install net curtains, which you'd probably more likely find in your grandma's house than in a high-spec glass-walled flat in the centre of London. They've paid so much for flats with probably what I imagine must be spectacular views, and they're now faced with either having to obscure those views so as to not be overlooked, or live with being on display while enjoying their views. But as the judge clarifies in his judgment, it's unusual to propose self-help remedies to the victim of a claimed nuisance. But you can see why the judge makes these suggestions to residents of glass flats who don't want to be overlooked in circumstances where they are arguably contributing to being overlooked to the extent they are.
Well, maybe they can lead the way in making net curtains trendy again. we gather that the residents are considering an appeal. I mean, do you think there is much chance of this issue being revisited by a higher court?
I think the judge has presented a well-reasoned judgment, taking account of all the relevant circumstances, which on balance just reads like it was the right decision. However, if the residents get leave to an appeal, I think it'll make some interesting reading, especially on what basis they do so. The only thing I could think of reading this might be perhaps on the sensitivity point, i.e. that at least some of the exposure was self-induced, but we won't know for sure until they do.
And looking beyond this case, it does sound like the relatively new ground the judge seems to have opened up is of limited application, at least as he sees it. But what do you think the wider implications of this decision will be? By ruling that privacy can, in principle, found a nuisance claim, do you foresee further claims in this area? And what factors do you think would be perhaps more likely to found a successful nuisance claim before perhaps other judges?
I think it would be interesting to see what happens, as in whether we see an increase in neighbour disputes on this issue, or at least threats of claims under this cause of action, or not, because it's clear from this case that mere overlooking still won't constitute an actual nuisance necessarily. There needs to be more to it. So is the use of the land which results in the overlooking reasonable in the circumstances? Is the overlooking the result of a deliberate act to facilitate overlooking of the neighbour's home? I think on balance this case is unlikely to open the floodgates of overlooking claims, as the normal principles of nuisance still need to be established. And as I said earlier, if there's no actionable nuisance in this case, it's difficult to see a realistic scenario where there would be an actionable nuisance for overlooking. Having said that, I wonder whether this case will assist with cases where there's perhaps excessive spying or overlooking between neighbours with purpose. So the kind where up until now, there may not have been enough for a claimant to establish harassment under the Protection from Harassment Act threshold, but they might be able to succeed in a claim in nuisance now that the judge has opened up the possibility to this. So this is where this case could become very relevant, but only time will tell.
Okay, well, thank you very much for coming here and offering us your views on this very interesting case.
Thanks very much, Les.